like to begin my sermon today by reading an excerpt from a letter to the editor. It was printed in an area newspaper. It's a letter that expresses concerns over the habits and customs and mores of a specific group of minority people in our communities. The language and the argument of this letter might sound familiar to those of us who were here in Prince William County in 2007. As we struggled through the passage and ultimately the quiet amending and ultimate gutting of legislation that allowed for strong local enforcement of federal immigration law. Legislation that the much-discussed current Arizona law allowing for similar enforcement is partially modeled on. In this letter to the editor, the author writes of this minority group arriving in droves in places like this one, formerly occupied by wholly different subsets of American culture, saying, "A large majority of them can neither read nor write, do not understand our language, and have natural tendencies to live crowded among their own race, and to continue the customs brought with them. The time has come when the American people must call a halt to the Italians." That letter was printed in 1906 in the Baltimore Sun. As Italian immigrants flooded into port cities around the United States, well after the previous flood of Irish immigrants made a new Catholic underclass in New England, and several hundred years after the first Euro-American explorers and colonialists landed on these shores, bringing change and innovation and death and the astonishing hubris of imperial powers right along with them. And that letter, indeed some of the most hateful and vitriolic slurs thrown at Native Americans and Irish and Italian and Eastern European immigrants over the long history of this nation's changing relationship to its constant stream of varying minority groups, that letter and all of that hate-filled speech, much of it pales in comparison to what was said to neighbors, by neighbors, in this very community during that painful time not so long ago. Do you remember the term anchor babies? I had never heard it before an elected officer of the group Help Save Manassas stood up in public and described these anchor babies, the children of illegal immigrants who are themselves full citizens, as, quote, "the enemy's greatest weapon." The enemy's greatest weapon, in what to some was nothing less than the pitched battle between the forces of brown-skinned evil and white-skinned good. It was a battle that to some was political, to others was racial, to everyone was painful. And it dominated our county politics for a period of time that seemed interminable, and indeed it's not over yet. They have their anchor babies, this man said. And they are their greatest weapons, and we will repel this invasion. An invasion of parasites, no less. Parasites with their anchor babies, amassed on the other side of a battle line which had been drawn so starkly that nobody quite knew who to trust anymore. And things as complex and as important as actual differing opinions about immigration law were overlooked in preference for these new, more starkly drawn lines. And because of those new battle lines in 2007, this town was not divided among those who are Republican and those who are Democrat, not divided among those who are conservative and those who are progressive, or even among those who are for or against tighter restrictions and greater attention to federal immigration problems. None of those lines were the lines across which we were divided then, but rather who was for or against this group, Help Save Manassas, who themselves personally identified as an army. a civil military force. That's what they said they were. Ready to move against the invaders who had come to this, their sacred soil. The founder of this group, the commander-in-chief and presiding officer of this army, was and is a man named Greg Latique, an area blogger who claimed to be organizing a grassroots collection of concerned citizenry, but was actually operating with the backing of large-scale national right-wing organizations. He has called this congregation and myself moon bats, a term which I do not even understand. And he has attacked our members as kooks and nutcases when they dared to speak against his rhetoric and his practices. During the height of the frenzy around the Prince William rule of law resolution, he publicly broadcast a message saying that these parasites he was repelling carried leprosy and murdered children and supported the overthrow of the government. Even the Prince William County Police Chief, by all accounts a responsible and courageous civil servant, if ever there was one, was branded a traitor by Help Save Manassas when he dared to question any aspect of all, at all of this race war agenda. I don't need to be telling you any of this, really. It's not like you didn't live it, didn't feel it, weren't hurt by it in one way or another. Many of you found your voices in that difficult time. Many of you found your voices in ways stronger and more sure than I ever did. And many of us struggled to stay in genuine and loving relationship to one another while the battle lines were being drawn. Because the truth is that we do not agree and should not seek to agree on an issue as broad and politically complicated as federal immigration law. We are a people of faith united by our diversity and committed to fair and loving conversation even and especially when we disagree. We are not liberal or conservative on the political stage, at least not at our best. And one cannot assume that the person seated next to you in these sacred old pews voted for the same candidate you did. And so in 2007, even we looked at one another out of the corners of our eyes. As the weeks turned to months and the hateful speech veered further and further away from an actual coherent political debate, even we were afraid. Not just of what was happening in our neighborhoods, but of what might happen in our beloved community if we were to find out that the battle lines were drawn and the war was on and our loved ones like brothers looking down the butt of their rifles at one another in 1861 were on opposite sides. And so we talked and we debated, and those who could find words spoke and those who couldn't waited, hoping that no matter what their politics were, that whole thing would eventually blow over without bringing too much shame to our community. And most of us were a little afraid. And even today, I speak these words with more than a twinge of fear. Not sure what kind of an attack on my character or on this congregation I love might trickle out of this sacred space and out into the blogosphere, or the street corner, or the boardroom. Even back then, the best we religious leaders could manage to do was write a letter to the Board of County Supervisors that said, in effect, cut it out. Play nice. Act like grown-ups here. And help us all make it through this in one piece. And here we stand now, as a beloved community some 3 years later on the other side, sort of. Late in the game, while the battle still raged in our county, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights came in and said that racial profiling wasn't an option and cameras would have to be installed on police cruisers to protect both officers and citizens against illegal detainment and lawsuits. But the money wasn't there, and the thing fell apart. And as before, it is the practice of the Prince William County Police Department to check one's status only after they have committed a crime and not before. But the damage perhaps is already done. Most everybody who is paying attention knows what side of the battle they were on. And even if right now the war isn't fought in the boardroom and the legislative books of this county, it's fought on the street, where people of color continue to report over-representation among those pulled over for minor or contrived offenses, and so many residents have moved out and lost their homes that the foreclosure rate here is the highest in the entire D.C. metro region and among the highest in the entire nation. I am not an economist, so I can't really tell you what exactly causes us to feel the financial pain of this crisis so much more acutely than our neighboring counties, but I can tell you that we're hurting and that we have been ever since Prince William County became synonymous with local enforcement of federal immigration law. There are two general sets of points that I want to make, or maybe just need to make, in this sermon. One of them consists of the sort of thing that you have a right and an expectation to hear from me. Comments on faith and questions of moral obligation not couched in specific political terms. There are those points. And the other set of points, the ones I can't quite talk myself out of no matter how hard I try, are the kind of things I don't usually let myself say here. If you disagree with them, they will be the product of a bully pulpit. If you agree, they will be something like prophetic witness. In truth, there's probably a little bit of both those things in what I have to say. Either way, I feel compelled to say them, and I'll get it out of the way before we move on to me doing my actual job. It is true that as a minister, I am neither able nor responsibly permitted to endorse a political candidate. But there is nothing whatsoever which says I cannot denounce one. The chairman of the Prince William County Board of Supervisors, Corey Stewart, is a dangerous man, and he is hurting us. The dictionary definition of the word demagogue reads thusly: a leader who makes use of popular prejudices and false claims and promises in order to gain power. And never have I seen a leader embody that definition more strictly and fearfully than that man. Politically, I'm not as liberal as some of you might assume, much to the gentle chagrin of those family members of mine who stand rather starkly on one side or the other. I'm something of a moderate most of the time and a flat-out libertarian when it comes to food and smoking. So I do not say these things of this man because of his partisan affiliation. I say it because I believe his ambition has clouded his obligation, and there is nothing but danger that comes out of that. Here is a leader who claims to be fiscally conservative but spent $100,000 of this county's money, your money, pursuing a law that was gutted because it couldn't hold up under reasonable legal challenge. Even as essential county programs, including services for the mentally ill, the elderly, and the indigent, have been slashed in this financial crisis. Here is a man who leaked the private emails of his fellow board members to the aforementioned blog in a last-ditch effort to strong-arm them into supporting his tactics and his ambitions. And here is a man who right now is touting the Prince William County rule of law resolution as an unqualified success on Fox News, even as we struggle to understand its implications and recover from the wounds it inflicted, and the integrity of our community tries to reknit itself. Right now, inspired by his newfound state-level political ambitions and surely pure faith in the integrity of his position, he's on the news telling his side of the story, and to hear him tell it, he was the only one in this county who was ever attacked. He was the only one whose character was ever defamed. He was the only one who suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, and the people of this place, we, his constituents, are eternally grateful for his generosity. We have become the example of how local immigration reform can work, of what a rousing success it is. There are statistics amply deployed that show that crime has dropped in this county, and other statistics which Corey says can prove that the illegal parasites left here and went to Fairfax, where curiously it does not appear that crime has gone up. We have become the poster children for this man's campaign, and he is telling the world that we are happy about it. I can draw no other conclusion but that these claims are, at best, oversimplification and, in truth, simply lies. I am not happy about it. I am not happy that children were called anchor babies and families were called parasites and the chief of police was labeled a traitor. I am not happy that members of this congregation who have brown faces find themselves pulled over for negligent or non-existent offenses, and businesses we have long patronized have gone under, and Georgetown South has 40 vacant houses, and the budget's been cut so far you have to be literally ready to slit your wrists to gain access to county services. I am not happy, and I do not want to be on that man's poster. And if the state of Virginia imposes local enforcement of federal immigration law, I do not want it to happen simply because his side of the story is the only side that our legislators hear. I don't know what it's like in Arizona. I don't live there. I've read their law, and some of it makes sense, and some of it makes me scared, and all of it is complicated. Then again, I read the Prince William County Rule of Law Resolution 2, and nothing on that piece of paper could really capture what it was like to live here at that time. We lived here. We live here now. And it was, and to some degree still is, utterly terrifying. Say what you want about federal enforcement of immigration law. I can probably be persuaded by a whole lot of arguments. All I know is that it wasn't just illegal immigrants who were scared to death here in Prince William County. It was every person of color, and darn near everyone else besides. And if that is one of the unintended or directly intended side effects of local enforcement of federal immigration law, it's a practice I want nothing whatsoever to do with. Now, I'm going to drop this sermon on you, and after a touch of polylog, I'm going to get out of here for about a month. I'm going to take a good long vacation and recover from my recently acquired acute case of righteous indignation. But I'll leave you with a question. How can we, together, of many political perspectives, speak of our values, especially if state-level enforcement becomes a real issue in Virginia? How can we tell our story, a story that is more complicated than that of any party, more nuanced than that of any politician? Our story is not just my story, and your indignation cannot be captured by my words. What are you afraid of? And what can you honestly state as a perspective on these complex issues that stands as an outgrowth of your faith? Our religious tradition is a covenant people. Oh. Did your phone ring? I didn't notice. But I did notice the apology. We are a covenant people, and it's about how we treat each other, not the exact measure of our belief. It's about how we choose to be in relationship and to what degree we model among one another the way the world should be. There is a lesson, I believe, that can be learned and taught and retaught by those who carry this troubled legacy, this story of immigration enforcement in Prince William County. Namely, that community matters. And when battle lines are drawn too clearly, we lose sight of our neighbors and we fear the ones with whom we are called to live and work. As covenant people, people promise to behave in a certain way together, we should strive not to draw new battle lines when there are quite enough of them already. As angry as I am, and as much as I do believe Corey Stewart and Greg Latique wronged this community and are intent on doing it still, there's a reason this sermon can't just end with my indignation. Because it doesn't solve anything. There will be lawyers and there will be politicians who can do the attacking, maybe wearing another hat informed by your faith and speaking for your individual perspective. You are among those people. But we as a congregation, as people of faith, must offer a faithful alternative and an honest witness in the face of ideological warfare. Instead of simply tearing the other side apart, we might start by telling our own stories. What happened in our own neighborhoods. What made us frightened. What caused us sorrow. And how we are committed to sticking it out alongside one another no matter what differences may face us. We should be an example of how a serious conversation about immigration and immigration reform might progress. Not racist slurs or underhanded attacks, not military metaphors or literal drawn guns, but compassionate listening out of which something effective and maybe even something beautiful might arise. Whatever happens on the level of state government, it absolutely cannot happen in the way the conversation proceeded here in Prince William County. It can never be okay to speak of whole populations as parasites and dog food. To walk the streets with eyes cast down, to have neighbor war against neighbor in a philosophical battle that becomes all too real. We cannot deny that illegal immigration is a problem. It has lasting impacts that endanger people and hurt the economy and cause working conditions not unlike modern-day slavery. But we also cannot deny that the sacrifice of communities is at stake if this state and this nation proceed apace using Prince William County as a model for how a conversation should be had. If we want immigration reform, we need to find a better model. A model consonant with the very best of our faith, and religious people need to help provide that better model by showing that earnest conversation can take place without hatred, racism, and fear. Our faith tells us that it's worth reaching out to those who think differently, live differently, look differently. And one of the spiritual cancers at the heart of the immigration debate here in our county was that it caused people, including us, to reach in instead of out. Instead of reaching out to one's neighbors when the music was too loud or the cars were double parked, folks reached into their own social, racial, and political groups. White folks hung out with white folks. The old guard circled the wagons. Hispanic families sought safety and affirmation with other Hispanic families. Liberals shouted with liberals, and the fragmentation of the community separated us further than we already were. These are rifts that are not easily healed. Now I know I've gone too political in this thing. I know I have shouted my righteous indignation from the rooftops. And I assure you it's not a practice I get into very often. But I at least wanted you to know what I think. What I really, really think, and I equally want you to know that I won't turn my back on you if you think differently. Unless, of course, you refer to Latino children as disease-carrying parasites, in which case we might not still be pals. Some of this is about politics. But the greater portion of it is about people. How people treat each other, speak of one another, dismiss one another, and how we can make the choice to work together instead of split apart. There is a legacy given and earned because of what this county has been through. And though it is troubled, not all of it is bad. There might be courage there. There might be compassion there. There might be sorrow, the kind that keeps us honest. This is our legacy and our story. And if it's going to be shared with the world, I hope and pray it is shared for all of its richness and all of its pain, not co-opted by a few, but willingly spoken by the many. The stakes are high, and our legacy is powerful. May we bear it with responsibility, with dignity, and with grace. Amen.